episode 263 of the Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast. Not the episode we wanted to record, but the episode that we have to record, maybe need to record. Tough conversations sometimes need to be had. And those are the conversations happening, hopefully, inside the Iowa football complex right now. Iowa gets dominated by the Badgers. We're going to talk about it from a former player perspective. Let's try and have a day. Let's go.
I legitimately don't even know why we're here, dude. It's 263 episodes of the podcast, and what am I even supposed to say after what just occurred? Kluver got me up at 5:30 in the morning because he has something more important than this podcast to do. And at this point, anything in the world is more important than this podcast because It's not fun to have a podcast when you have an offensive line that is literally just a pasta strainer, dude. And the defensive line is water. And Spencer is the one on bottom getting waterboarded to death. And I Kevin Casper, I was with him and his family, I guess it was really just him and his wife watching the game, and it was abysmal. It was good to have company so that we could talk about things other than football. We could talk about the success of his son and, you know, this, that, and the other. But I mean, what am I supposed to say, Kluwer? Go.
Pasta strainer. I just needed you for one. That's why I got you up at 5:30, man. I got you up at 5:30.
You got me up and on a podcast before I even got my coffee sucked down. Yep. I don't even know which way is up, and neither does the offensive line for the Iowa Hawkeyes. Mm-hmm. And the part that bothered me the most is that they weren't even willing to go in there and turn it into a fight. Like, I swear, watching the TV, it looked like those offensive linemen were okay with just five making them his bitch. Like they were just fine with calling him daddy and saying, yes, daddy, we'll just open up the gate for you so that you can come right into our backfield and completely destroy our entire game plan and send us home, you know, rode hard and put away wet. Like, it was absolutely pathetic.
How many sacks do you want, daddy?
Daddy, how many do you want, daddy?
You want 10 sacks? You got it.
Dude, the kid wrote death row in Sharpie on his arm, and he walked in and just put the hammer down.
That's what he had on his arm?
Death row. Tattooed or written in Sharpie on his arm. And like,
that's the storyline then. Because he literally made our line a row of death. It was death row, and he went up against it and won all day.
Dude, he walked in with the rifle and put all our dudes on the shooting line.
Firing wall. It was that kind of day, listeners of the Wash Up Walk-Ons, which I imagine is an abysmal number as well.
Yeah, we got to have such few numbers. Nobody cares anymore. When you can't even get a first down, nobody cares about your podcast anymore. We're talking to nobody.
Yeah, there's a few of them out there. Few have said that they wanted to come in and listen to Drake. Someone even donated $50 to just for the F-bomb fund in prep for this episode.
Well,
and I don't even know.
In regards to that, thank you. And I am fucking heated about what the Hawks are. Just the effort, man. Like, it didn't even look like they were trying. Really didn't even look like they were trying.
Let's start there because for some reason, I decided to indulge myself in a lot of Twitter conversation yesterday.
I mean, if the game is bad and you're not having too much fun otherwise.
And that may have been it, right? I needed something to entertain me. And so Kevin Ward showing up, actually. We didn't know if he'd be here or not. Oh, my goodness. There he is.
Kevin is one of those.
And Kev, it looks like, you know, the lights are off. It's dark in Iowa City. It looks like we just got up to go to the complex on a Monday morning. We got a 6 a.m. lift. You got the sweatshirt on, the grout fit, throw the flip-flops on, hop in the
How you feel this morning, Kev?
I like how we always used to throw the flip-flops on regardless of the weather, too.
Didn't matter. Didn't matter. Hey, doesn't matter if it's 98 degrees, 98% humidity, and dry as a bone, it's grout fit and flip-flops. 18 degrees.
I do miss wearing, being able to wear the grout fit like out in public on a regular basis.
I'd still do it if I even went outside. I'm just a hermit who watches, well, for the last couple weeks, the Hawks lose. We'll get your thoughts in a second. Kevin, what I was going to say there, Drake, was a lot of the Twitter's a place of vitriol.
And it's a snake pit.
It's a dump, right?
It is an absolute dump.
Most of the time.
It can be really fun, though.
And yesterday I was having fun for some reason, and I think Drake's right. I think it was because the game was so disappointing and so far gone that I decided to start engaging with people on Twitter. Not in a bad way. I had a lot of productive conversations. I never get in arguments. It's something that Drake and Kevin probably would tell you about me if you're like, hey, who is Kluver in a nutshell? They'd be like, well, he's just the most non-confrontational, doesn't care on the surface person on earth.
I'd have just called you a pussy, but
and Drake would call me a pussy. There's a third, yeah, there's some other ones in there. But on Twitter, I get that people, you know, many of the tweets are like, oh, put somebody else in for quarterback. We need a new offensive.
Which is fine, because at this point, it's fine. We could empty the bench with who we played at quarterback, and the quarterback is a complete non-factor in the offense anymore. Like, it does not matter which quarterback on our roster lines up behind center. We're going to lose.
And I'm going to get to that in a second, because I actually have maybe some intriguing thoughts about that the fans might – mean be surprised. The one thing that I usually hate, and this isn't just from yesterday, but in general, as a former player, knowing the effort that's put in from the inside, is I really, really, really only take offense to one thing, and that's when people call out the effort and people trying, right? Because 99% of the time, I can almost guarantee that everybody on that roster for Iowa, at least, I can't speak for other programs, but I can guarantee that they are doing the best that they can, regardless of if the results are good or bad, right? We got boat raced against McCaffrey and the Stanford Cardinal, but on that day, I promise I was giving an effort on punt team to try and catch that motherfucker. I was running as hard as I could, man. He just ran harder and faster, and their scheme was better. And that sometimes, you know, one team has to lose, one team has to win. Drake, you mentioned the line yesterday. It does look like, you know, maybe sometimes their effort is to question. I don't know if it is. I think maybe they are so actually lost and discombobulated that it just looks that bad. I don't know.
If that's the case, man. But there were so many times where it wasn't, it was a hat on a hat issue.
I know.
It was a plain flat out hat on a hat issue. And it didn't even look like our guy lost giving it everything he had. It was so easy at times for those guys to just destroy everything that we were trying to do on the front side, on the backside, on screens. It didn't matter what play Brian called. Brian was trying to call plays where Spencer caught the ball and retreated as fast as he could, and the line didn't really have to block anybody to set it up, and the only guy that had to block somebody didn't block anybody, and Spencer couldn't even retreat fast enough to get the ball off.
Hey, like, be careful there, because people on Twitter think that he's sitting back there not trying to call things that work.
Listen, man, Brian tried everything. He tried everything in the book. He was
not according
to Twitter. I don't know, man. The guy was trying to get points on the board. When he was going for it on fourth down, he was trying to get points on the board. He trusts Monty more than he trusts that offensive line wedge blocking against them countering the Wisconsin defensive line, countering the sneak. And, you know, Monty has a little more time. He can bounce out to a hole. If everybody pinches down on the sneak, he might be able to find something. And like, he gives a little more beef, but on those fourth downs, I know we're typically a QB sneak team, but when we are absolutely getting dominated at the line of scrimmage, just because Linderbaum is really good doesn't mean he can overtake the entire defensive line in Wisconsin. He's not Superman. Like,
I think Brian found out that even handing it to Monty isn't good enough there. Like, clearly.
We were just flat out outmatched up front, and it was one of the worst outmatchings I've seen.
I want to say something quickly before we get Kevin's thoughts, because Kevin's sitting there just in sadness, and it's a Kevin I've seen before, and it makes me sad, man. But quickly, I think there was more than one as the game finished, but there was one very specific play where you could say, oh, that was on Spencer. There was one very specific play call or two play calls where you could say, Brian probably could have done better there. The miss down the seam to Nico, he overthrew him, and it should have been caught for sure. I really, really hesitate to, without rewatching the film and watching every guy, say that it with conviction is somebody's fault on their own. But that was a miss. And the two back-to-back fullback dives with a timeout in between was – in hindsight, Brian's going to look at that and say,
but I want to know what else you call there. What do you think works there if the fullback dive doesn't?
Well, this
if they blow up the wedge so bad that Monty can't get A or B gap anywhere close to the line of scrimmage. His contact came behind the line of scrimmage. So if Monty can't get A gap or B gap line of scrimmage contact, I mean, what is going to win there?
It's the question that I was asking a few people. Like, everyone loves to question the play calls, and then the natural next step is, okay, then what? Okay, then what? Right? I think the Tyler Goodson touchdown that we scored against, it was all the motion went one way, and Spencer pitched it out the other way.
Oh, it was missile.
It was the fake fullback dive to the. Yeah.
I think that was
they ran that action. If you saw it.
Yeah. That's what the running back runs every time that we hand it off to the fullback.
Yeah. Or at that point, I know it's third and one, fourth and one.
Are you looking for like the Peyton Manning naked boot where Peyton just, you know what I'm saying? Do you have a backside tight end run a post and Spencer hides the ball and tries to get out on the perimeter?
I think in that situation, people were looking for anything but a run up the middle, right? Anything but a run up the middle.
I think, especially given that we ran it the play before to no success.
Yeah.
I'm kind of with you, Kluver. That was one where it's like, after a timeout, that's like the best play we came up with. You know, in my opinion, coaches get graded every play just like players do, and if I'm being honest with myself, I'd give Brian a minus there. And obviously, you know, that didn't work out. You know, I think we could have come up with something better there.
I think
that's being results oriented myself, just because we have come on this podcast a lot and been like, yeah, just run the sneak. It's guaranteed. You can't stop us on the sneak. Just fucking run the sneak.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
I wouldn't have been mad with the sneak.
Sneak hadn't been doing successful either.
No.
You know?
I think on this podcast specifically, a lot of people, especially the fringe, right? Not the walk-on army. Shout out the walk-on army. People on the fringe who tune in every once in a while, or they gave us a shot and then they didn't like us for some reason, but they tune in when they want like drama. They like to think that we're homers, like to the max, just because we played for the program. And I think if you listen to all the episodes, like you would figure that out, that we aren't. And I think that sometimes people think that we won't criticize the coaches or whatever. That's not necessarily the case. People think that on Twitter too, when I interact with people, that I'm some guy who like is unaffected by Iowa doing bad and I never want to see anything change, and that people should never question, fans shouldn't question the coaches and spit their disdain out on social, because it's, you know, I always tell people like, what's it worth? I get it. And the comeback's always like, well, then should I just not be a fan then? Should I just not be a fit? Like, you just not want me to care? I'm just like, well, you know, we have to, you know, you can be a fan and do it all you want if it makes you feel better. But I think you're sort of creating a negative self echo chamber there and just putting more negative energy into the ethos. But it's not always as easy as just criticizing Brian or criticizing Spencer, right? It's a multivariable problem. And your tweet looks really good when you say Brian is objectively bad at his job. He's just so bad at his job. Okay. And you would have called what against Penn State when we scored that Nico touchdown? He was wide open, ran for the end zone, won us the game. You would have called what when we did call that Tyler Goodson pitch and he ran wide open for 60 yards down the middle. Like, it is results oriented, right? So
it's very, very results oriented.
Now,
I mean, you know, I live in the professional world.
And that doesn't mean Brian's not.
The real world's fucking results oriented, man. I mean, if you don't perform, if you don't make the desired results, you know, your reality is going to set in for you. I work in sales. If I don't hit my quota 2-3 years in a row, I'm going to start looking for another job, because yeah, I'm not going to be here very much.
No, and I get it, Kev. It is.
If you're a football player out there and you're trying your best, but you're just not getting the job done, if you're constantly blowing coverages, missing tackles in the wrong gap, coach is like, got to be like, dude, I can't have you out there.
Right.
I need to put someone else on the field. If I'm a quarterback, I'm constantly missing open receivers. I mean, I believe he's trying. I mean, I can't imagine anyone out there playing Big Ten football isn't trying.
Right. Yeah.
It's Big Ten football.
No,
there was 100-something athletes out there living out their fucking dream on a Saturday morning in Madison, Wisconsin. They're all trying.
Yeah. And where I was going was, Brian isn't immune to being graded either. Like, Brian, it's very naive to assume that Brian just always is calling the right play. He's the best offensive coordinator in the, as much as we know.
And I'd say the same thing about Phil. I mean, I don't think the defense had a perfect game. I don't think we called the perfect game. We gave some long third downs that I was pretty upset about, especially with the digs over the middle. Wisconsin's been running that play for 10 years on us now, and I guess not 10 years. I think we first saw it in 2014 pop up, but it's like their favorite play to run against us. And I was irate that they completed it twice on us.
Kevin was punching the TV. No, and I just, when I interact with fans, they seem to think that I come across as, because I do most of the interaction on Twitter, they seem to think that I'm like arrogant, or that I'm on, I've been told to get off my high horse because I tell people to be wary of criticizing without logic and real reason behind it. I'm okay with criticism. 100% okay with criticism. I don't think Brian called the best game. I don't think our offensive line is good at all. I don't think a lot of things. The problem is 95% of the criticisms that come are pure emotion-based.
I agree. I see where you're going. Just saying, spewing fired Brian Ferentz, he sucks out in the air.
Right. With no,
not,
with
not
with,
great. It's like, with hey, no backup Brian to it. Is like, okay, bad play call here.
Good play call here. You know, it's,
I think Brian Ferentz did not perform today, and I think he should be relieved of his duties. That's a logical tweet.
Yeah. And instead, not just
flipping the bird out to the world right
there. Right. Instead, it's a burner account who says, the Hawks fucking suck. Brian is objectively bad at his job. He's just not good. Nothing, no substance behind it, right? And that's okay. That's Tyler Kluver, I'm not going to be able to change the thousands of fans out there in a fan base who want to go and feel better about, I don't know, themselves or the team, or feel like they know more because they send out a tweet, right? But for some reason, I feel the need to, if I can change a few perspectives on how fans view the game and how multivariable it is, for some reason that makes me feel better. And people say, I got a message this morning at like 6 a.m. from somebody I was in an argument with yesterday, who said, you know what? And it's so funny how many people come to me in the messages afterwards and apologize. I had so many people in the moment. They're just furious, just Twitter finger, Cheeto fingering it out. And then I get messages later on like, hey man, I want to explain what I said earlier. I love the Hawks, and I get it, man. I we all do. And it's what makes this whole ecosystem great. But for you to, with conviction, get on social media as Joey Cheeto Fingers, who's sitting in his basement watching the Hawkeyes, and say, with the amount of certainty that these tweets or these statements come across with, Brian Ferentz is bad at his job. Spencer Petras has not gotten any better since game one as a starter. Hey, guys, you got to be careful now, because it's not that easy. All of that being said,
I feel a whole lot better about the status of our offense in general. If they just would have made it scrappy, man, if they just would have made it look like they weren't willing to go away quietly into the night. Like, I know we had one good possession in the second half, and it looked like we might have a little bit of life, but for 90% of the offensive snaps, our offensive line didn't even look like they wanted to fight for it. And that's by far the most concerning point, because typically offensive lines, if things aren't going well, they turn things into a scrap because they hate it, right? It's like offensive linemen are mean and gritty, and they don't take stuff like that.
For good Iowa teams, for sure.
We just took it in the mouth. You know, Brandon Scherff would have never took it in the mouth, right?
And I think if you went back and watched Lindy, who is our Brandon Scherff, who is our Werfs, I bet he was fighting all game, right?
Yeah.
As much as
the offensive woes can be put on anybody, let's not relieve Lindy of any blame either, because he is the leader of the offensive line, and he takes pride in that. And he's a captain of the team.
And I bet he's fucking pissed right now.
He's the one who is responsible, along with his offensive line coach and, you know, Shooter. You know, these young guys, they're young, they're inexperienced. They don't even know what a 3-4 defense is coming into college. Like, it's Lindy's job to create the cohesion. And if it's not there, it's not like all the blame's on him. But he could maybe turn around and jump on these guys' ass and make them turn it into a scrap. You know, there was just no fight. I don't know. I just didn't see it. We just went quietly into the night.
It's hard to argue with that. I'm of the opinion that it was the skill gap was so bad that it doesn't matter how hard they fight, they were going to make them look silly regardless.
I don't think that's Drake's point. It's just that, you know, if you're getting embarrassed, you should want to fight.
Oh, yeah.
I agree. Here's the other thing is we saw very clearly why Iowa doesn't want to start guys young is because look at the size of the older defensive linemen, juniors and seniors on Wisconsin's, you know, front, however many, since they play 3-4, call them their front seven, but you know, it's really,
which like is, by the way, five. Let's not forget, you know, the second best front in the country. That is something right. to consider here.
You got
I mean, those guys, and they were playing against some young kids.
They were, yeah. Or it was lions eating at the elk trough, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I think we also have to acknowledge the fact that we made a lot of unforced errors.
Oh boy, did we.
Dude, the goal line stand to fumble it two plays later.
The defense wanted to shoot themselves in the brain.
No, I mean, I'm surprised that the next quarterback sneaked, the quarterback didn't hit his head on the fucking goalpost. That's so deflating to the defense. Like, unbelievable. Unbelievable. You put in a great effort to have a goal line stand, and then you just give the ball right back to them.
Kev, I know that it hurts you to see 27 points on the board, but from Drake and I on the other side of the whole situation.
I mean, yeah, 10 of those points are completely unavoidable for the defense. You fumble recovery on the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
And then,
not to mention
the muff punt, they recovered one, the 15, something like that.
Right. So, you know, that takes you down to your 17, which I think is like your guys' number. And even then, that 17 was, they held them to that with all the shitty field position throughout the rest of the game. Like, the defense played the best 27-point effort that a team's ever played yesterday, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't play perfect, but, you know, what's...
Man, they fought hard.
There's a few bad tackles.
Hard.
Yeah, they missed some tackles. I mean, that dude they got in the fucking Wisconsin just knows how to turn out some dudes in the running back. You see the video of him squatting 600 pounds as a freshman.
God, that was so just dumb.
Ridiculous. So, I mean, yeah, that guy's going to break a couple tackles, but still, you know, we could have been a little bit more shored up in the run game. Like I said, a couple passes.
And when you talk about fight, Drake, there was some fight from Noah Shannon and Joe Evans yesterday on the D-line. On that goal line stand, and Noah Shannon, and maybe an undersized guy. I think he's only 6 foot or 6'1".
He's an Nate Bushida.
They are battling in there against a massive
man. A goal line stand against Wisconsin is fight. Like, that's what you're looking for, man. Like, that should have been all the momentum towards Iowa. We should have been charging over the sideline, you know, absolutely fired up. The offense should come out and use that momentum. And what do we do? We turn around and can't even hand the football off.
That's, I mean, not even if they did hand the ball off, or I saw this on the play, this is going to be a yard. Like, he was going to struggle to get out of the end zone.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And that's not our coach's fault, man. What play do you run? You can't drop back. You can't run play action from the one.
Actually, yeah, Twitter said that was Brian's fault for handing it to Ivory Kelly Martin in the first place, since he fumbled the ball.
Technically, Brian's not the running back coach anymore, and he doesn't call the personnel. Brian may not have even known what running back was in the game. That's completely on Coach Liddell Betts, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was the one who put Ivory in the game, and that's how it's always been.
Yeah.
I mean,
ideally, you'd like to trust whatever back you have back there, right? And
you would like to be able to trust whatever back you have on scholarship. If he's a six-year senior running back on scholarship, you expect him to be trustworthy in those situations.
Yeah. I mean, I just want, like, Iowa is a team, I feel like we really struggle to correct the ship when things are going bad. But when things are going good, you know, we can play with the best of them. You saw that kind of in the third quarter when we won the field position battle a little bit. Had a, you know, there was actually like, okay, maybe we can claw our way back into this thing.
It was 20-7. We had the ball in reasonable field position.
It was like on their 40-yard line.
Yep.
And
a miracle spot to be in.
So, I mean, like, field position is it's been this way all year long. It's just been so critical, and we didn't win that early. Starting off, you know, first play, kickoff return. I'm like, oh, great. This is exactly what we need.
Couldn't have a better start.
Torrey has a good punt. Gunner's not looking at the ball. Ball rolls in the end zone.
First of all, they get
at the 20 instead of the one.
Scary fucking Terry on Halloween weekend wasn't playing. And that's why we lost, first of all. Because Scary Terry wasn't in the game. And that makes me sad. Who knows, man?
Maybe Scary Terry downs that ball on the one. Maybe that makes it a completely different ball
game. Changes the whole game.
Let's see. We give up a few first downs. They punt it. We're on the 9-yard line. And
the offensive line magically grows and gets better, and they play better. And then, yeah, it all gets better from there.
But
yeah, you're right, Kev. I mean, I sat here with both of you individually on Wednesday and said field position and turnovers. And Wisconsin, in those two areas, took a baseball bat and beat the shit out of us with it.
Again, for me, the most frustrating thing is they only forced one turnover. Their defensive end had made a pretty nice pass rush move, swatted the ball out of Spencer's hands.
Yeah, made our right tackle.
The other two were completely unforced.
Yeah.
Completely unforced.
And why are we –
senior running back can't receive a fumble, and a senior punt returner just lets it hit him in the chest.
And I'm not making excuses here because it's on those two guys who fumbled 100%. But I thought that I saw Ivory take a scared glance up and take his eyes off the handoff. Can't do that.
Well, he's not supposed to be looking at the ball. His instruction is never to look at the ball. The quarterback will get the ball in the pocket. Oh. You know where the mesh point is. You just create your pocket, and the quarterback's going to hit you in it. He's supposed to be looking at his read key, which is the front side defensive tackle, and his feel key is the backside defensive tackle, by which if he feels him start to cross over his face, he makes the play in the backside gap and the play goes backside.
Maybe he wasn't looking at him enough then.
All I know is that just absolutely
can't happen. Front side defensive tackle is about a yard and a half in the backfield by the time he got to the mesh.
Max Cooper being on punt return, not ideal.
Yeah, I don't know why Charlie Jones wasn't back there. Charlie Jones is a very good returner.
He got poked in the eye.
Oh, fuck.
On the previous kick return or a play that was very close, and his eye was like all fucked up. They were worried about his depth perception returning, and so they put Max back there. Now, this is total conjecture, but Max doesn't play a lot. He gets in a game at Wisconsin. If I'm not mistaken, he's from Wisconsin. So he probably had a bunch of family members there. I mean, the boy got nervous on punt return, and he fumbled the bag, literally.
I consider college athletes, you know, we're damn near grown-ass men.
They're grown-ass men.
Especially if you're a senior, you're a grown-ass man. You have a job to do. You should be able to go do your job. Punt returning is like got to be the most nerve-wracking position in the sport of college football.
Not if you fair catch it.
Whatever happened, it went right through, and everything was going. I'm telling you, it felt like the first quarter that we played against Indiana, except for we were Indiana and they were us. That's the momentum that was going on at that point in the game. I mean, everything was going bad. And there was really nothing good about the game. There's nothing good. And there's really nothing more to talk about. I mean, here's the thing. I came up with this analogy at 5:45 this morning when thinking about the quarterback situation. Because now the whole thing is, well, it can't get worse. Can't get worse. If we have a paper-thin line, then we got to call plays and put people in at least somewhat the best position possible to make something potentially be able to happen. So why not put Padilla in? Let's put in someone who can get out of the court. And I will say this right now. People who think I'd like defend Spencer Petras, I just defend the fact that it's a multivariable issue. Spencer's pocket awareness, not the best, right?
I mean, I'll be honest. I don't think Spencer had a good game. I thought he missed some throws. And
yeah, no, he did. Given
the fact that, you know, don't have a good offensive line in front of him, I don't think guys did a very good job of getting open. I don't think Brian called the greatest route concepts. Given all those variables, I still don't think Spencer had a very good game.
And he didn't. And people get confused and think I defend Spencer when I'm. Yeah. But I'm curious what you guys think about this idea.
I'm perfectly fine with changing the quarterback.
Yeah.
Do it. Because it can't get worse.
Can't get worse.
You simply cannot play worse on offense, period. When you don't have a first down in the entire first half, there is no worse. So do it. I don't care. If you're Brian, all – the gloves are off. Like, you can do whatever you want.
Well, no one's going to question it at this point. Yeah. I mean,
the team's already proved an ineptness, such an ineptness on the offensive side of the ball that Brian is basically free money now. He can do whatever he wants. Go ahead and put your backup quarterback in and watch nothing change. And then you just shrug your shoulders and be like, what do you want me to do?
I think. You got thoughts, Kevin? I saw your mouth open, chewing on something.
I mean, so here's my thing is I was still very much in the conversation for the West. Okay. Like, the season's not over by any means.
That's what I was going to end this whole thing with.
Is, do we really believe
that? Do we really want to show up to the Big Ten championship with this offense and get thrown out like Wisconsin did or Nebraska did against Wisconsin in like 2014?
We'd prefer not to, but it's still.
Would you rather not win the West? I mean, do you want to lose a couple more games? I mean, my question is, and this is for the coaches, not for the fans, it's for the coaches that see them practice every day, is who do we really believe gives us the best chance to win these next four games?
Yeah. And here's, if you have more, I'll let you speak, but here's my thoughts on that. Right now, the situation we have with this offensive line, it's like ordering a pizza and it comes and it's a shitty thin crust cheese pizza. I mean, it's the most bland, bad pizza you could get, right? You'd love Lou Malnati's, right, Kev? I mean, you'd always like Lou Malnati's. That thick, it's saucy. It's a pie, right? And that is.
But Domino's showed up by this person that's about to quit their job the next day, and they don't give a fuck what your pizza looks.
And it was
like.
And it was a pizza they made for somebody else that they pulled out of the dumpster. That's currently what our offense is. Now, you'd love Lou Malnati's, right? But because you have the cheese pizza, and that's just what you're gonna get tonight. Maybe you grab the ranch out of the fridge. It's not like it could get any worse. So let's grab the ranch out of the fridge. It's not the cheese pizza's fault, right? Cheese pizza's cheese pizza. It's never going to be Lou Malnati's, which would be, in this analogy, the perfect offensive line that allows Spencer time, right? So why not take the ranch, the Alex Padilla, out of the fridge? Because he does one thing, arguably, from a fan's point of view, that we could probably say is he runs better. He will get out of the pocket better than Spencer does, right? Everything else, I'm trusting that the coaches have Spencer in because Spencer knows the play calls, the checks. He has better accuracy, all these things in a good pocket. But if we're not going to have the good pocket, the Lou Malnati's pizza, then maybe, and this is a horrible way to play football, but this is the spot that the Hawks are in right now. Maybe we put in the quarterback that is better outside the pocket. Now, do we want to run play? This is what our offense is going to turn into if this happens. It's going to be Alex catches the ball, the pocket collapses, he runs for his life, and he tries to make something happen every play. It's either we hand it off or he does that on the pass plays. That's what you're asking for. But he does give us the ability, and he showed it at the end of the game. I understand it was against the twos. It was against a defense that was keeping everything in front. It was at the end of the game, nothing to lose. But he did escape the pocket, roll out to the left, And Laporta was able to change route, and they made something happen. Spencer does not do that, and he's not going to do that because he does not get outside the pocket. So at this point, fuck it. Oh. Right?
Yeah.
So Tyler Kluver is sitting here saying, Alex Padilla for November 6th. Vote Padilla for quarterback. Because I love you, Spence, but you're not going to be with this offensive line. What your skill set gives us, we don't have time for it. So I think we just have to go to Alex or someone.
So here's my thoughts. We're playing Northwestern next. Then we got Minnesota, Illinois, Nebraska.
And Northwestern's bad, by the way. I was 3-0 this weekend. If you want someone to tail, I'm 15-8 this year.
Good job. That was exactly my next point. Northwestern's not good. They do not get pressure on the quarterback. I don't think any of these next four teams do a really good job pressuring the quarterback.
Right.
So I'm still going with Spencer, but he's got a leash now. He did not have a leash. It was his job at the beginning of the year. He's got a leash now. It's a little shorter. I'm still going with Spencer for this week versus Northwestern. And for that reason, because I expect us to be able to protect the pocket a little bit this game. And if we can't, then you're probably right, Clove.
I'm totally okay with that too, because I agree with you. We just played, other than Iowa's defense, the three best defenses in the Big Ten in a row. Right. So in Iowa's fan memory, which recency bias is a very real thing, we remember not running the ball against Penn State, not getting anywhere against Purdue, who had a good, who has a good defensive front, and not getting anywhere against the second best. We've been playing good fronts, not good fronts, great fronts, right? We now play Northwestern, Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska. None of those four teams are as good on defense as any of the three teams we just played.
Yeah, but we legitimately just made two Big Ten West football teams' defenses look like they were the Tampa Bay Bucks.
We did.
Like, it's not like we weren't. It's not like we were playing an NFL front seven, and it just completely looked like we were.
But I mean, Drake, this is still the same offense that, didn't play great against Indiana, but has some success.
Oh no! Here, hey. I understand that we don't have a good offense, and that's why I'm saying at this point in the season, there's nothing that can hurt by putting it in, because we're already underperforming so badly for our defense.
Yeah, we're to that point.
You can't underperform worse. We're giving them the ball every which way, any way they want it, in great field position for the entirety of the football game. It can't get any worse. So who cares at this point, because there is no going backwards. That's how bad our offense is through 8 weeks. I was screaming at week three when I didn't even show up to the podcast. I'm like, I'm tired of our offense not showing up to the football game. And now we're week eight and it's the exact same situation. That's why I'm saying, who cares? The wheels are off. We've already got flat tires. Just do it. Just let's see what else is out there. Like, add some spikes.
So here's my thing, is we're going to be facing defense like we faced the first 5 weeks versus the last 3 weeks for the remainder of the season, where they had some success, you know,
and they were able to get things going.
They were able to move the ball. They were able to put drives sustained together.
I agree, Kev. The leash is very short, because if Spencer comes out against a Northwestern front,
I'm going to say, do you think, given the last 2 weeks, I don't know if you guys ever dealt with, lack of playing with confidence, but do you think that affects any of the guys on offense?
Oh, I think at this point, I think those
the
boys.
The entire offense. It has to be every single one of them.
Did I ever play with a lack of, for me, it was different.
Dude, they just got bullied by other dudes that were supposedly their age and their skill level. They got bullied.
I would say yes.
Like, it was a Christian McCaffrey type situation. It was an us against Penn State in Happy Valley on offense situation. We got bullied out of that stadium.
In 2014, Kevin, I was, we still ran the spread, right? So I was setting pro. So I was setting back and I was blocking people, right? We went to the common shield where I didn't have to do shit and my job became literally so easy. But in 2014, as a first year starter, I did not feel confident blocking some of those bodies that were coming
out.
And
do you feel like that affected your actual ability to block those people or your performance? Or
it definitely was on my mind. I don't know if it actually affected it, but it was thought about. And if they're thinking about their ability versus what they should be doing technically, I think it opens the door for them to make mistakes.
Sure. I know we just played one of the best defenses in the country yesterday, but it was the worst the offense had looked year to date.
I got a question for you.
Coming off a very bad Purdue game, you would hope to see improvements throughout the year. The last two games that offense was on the field were the two worst games the offense has played.
Even worse, we haven't even talked about this. It was out of a bye week.
Right. And that's the really disappointing part. That's the sole reason why I had the Hawks in my picks this week. I expected that bye week to be exactly what they needed. I really hope for a good game plan out of Brian. And I really hope for the offensive line to have their shit together a little bit more.
Which you were 2-1, by the way, still.
I was 2-1. Yeah. Didn't get the one that I wanted the most, but.
Right. I got a question for you, Kevin. This was asked, and I've got two more things to finish.
Let me go before you go, Kluv. Because Kevin asked me a question. What do you want to do? Just lose extra games? No, never want to lose any games. I want the Hawks badly to win the next four games because we played there, and we're always going to cheer for the team no matter what, no matter how far separated we get from playing days, no matter if this podcast were to tank and how disconnected we were, we would still cheer for the Hawks on Saturday. So I'm always going to cheer for them to win. But what I'm not going to cheer for is this particular team, which I didn't know when we were winning, aside from the Penn State game, when we were winning the first 5 weeks, I knew our offense wasn't great.
And everyone did.
I didn't know how badly that 3 week stretch was going to expose our defense.
Yeah.
Or our offense. I'm sorry. How badly that 3 week stretch of defenses was going to expose our offense. Yeah. I simply don't want to show up to Indy and get exposed to the max. That would just be so embarrassing. Like the whole world is watching, every college football fan in the world is watching primetime on championship Saturday to see the Big Ten championship. And this offense would get flat out exposed, flat line, drop dead. And we'd get beat by 30 in the Big Ten championship. And it would be embarrassing as hell.
Yeah. I mean, no one wants this hypothetical situation to happen, obviously, but you know, no one wanted ass get kicked in the Rose Bowl either, but I'm still glad we went.
Yeah. I think,
that's why you play the game, you know, that anything can happen. It's just,
I'm
not confident in anything that they're doing right now from top to bottom.
Another variable in this, the Penn State game is an outlier here, but in the last 2 weeks, in the first 4 or 5 weeks, we were able to create massive turnover margins in our favor. And that allowed us, by proxy of field position that you get from those turnovers and from just general momentous swings, that allowed our offense to have a little more confidence, play a little bit looser. We have not done that the last 2 weeks, not only are we already at a disadvantage because it's just about offense, but we haven't been able to, you know, we were talking early in the season, the defense has to win games for this team. And the defense hasn't lost the games the last 2 weeks, but they haven't won it either.
Right. And this, you know, I've said this before. I think a better stat to track for defenses as far as turnovers is forced turnovers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Talia Tagovailoa just throwing the ball to Kayvon Merriweather is not a forced turnover.
Right.
Us dropping a punt is not a forced turnover.
Yeah. Maryland beat Indiana, and by the way. Indiana
is very hard to force turnovers, to get tip balls that deflect into a safety's hand. That's a forced turnover. To make a great play in zone defense or one-on-one with the receiver and make a play, that's a forced turnover. To punch a ball out, very hard to do, especially against good teams. And credit Graham Mertz, he didn't lose them the game.
Yeah.
Graham Mertz was going to have to win that game for Wisconsin. He just had to take care of the ball, hand it off, make a few throws.
He had one good drive that opening drive, 11 of 22 for 104 yards and a touchdown was Graham Mertz. 11 of 22, 50% for 100 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, and the touchdown, the guy was wide open.
Kev, I got a question for you before we close this down.
Yeah, hit me.
As a defensive guy, you're playing on arguably a top 10 defense in the country, even though, it's a top 10 defense in the country. And you're having to go out and try and defend and put up a goal line stand after a fumble in our own territory. You're having to go out there possession after this offense is putting out there. A lot of questions from the social media were, is this going to start to cause a little bit of friction between the defensive side of the ball and the offensive side of the ball within the locker room, because the offense is literally fucking this defense?
I think maybe it should. I legitimately think maybe that would be for the better. Kevin, argue with me there.
Yeah, so.
And I know the answer of how locker room dynamic works, but I'd like you to talk to it just for.
So here, our offense struggled at times too when we're playing, and it's facts. Really easy when you're on the side of the ball that's playing well to get frustrated with the other side of the ball. And full transparency, there is times where I'm like, I just wanted to shout out, give us a fucking chance.
Cha-ching.
But, and this is something, one of my shortfalls is, there was conversations, defensive player to defensive player, about that. We're playing good, and it's just frustrating that we can't put points on the board.
There was conversation, defensive player to fullback, about that, because we were just as equally frustrated. We were trying to get on the damn field too.
Here's the thing, man. It's that's not good for your culture. That's having little whispering conversations in the locker room. That doesn't help the team get
see,
better.
I wasn't thinking whispering conversations in the locker room. I was thinking about taking it to the practice field. Tuesday practice, the defensive line just starts bitch slapping the offense. Like, see, this is what the fuck happens to y'all. This is why we lose football games. Y'all are losing us the goddamn game. We're out here playing our balls off. We're out here doing everything we can for this team. And it's y'all. This is on y'all. And create the fire, man. Know that, make them feel the pressure of letting their teammates down. Like, look them in their fucking eyes and let them know that this is unacceptable.
That would be more productive than the whispering conversations. I agree. But I still don't know if that's productive relative. In the end, Kev, I know what you're getting.
I don't have an answer for you.
Here's the answer.
I was the captain. I didn't know what to do. I don't know.
And this is where it gets real deep.
And you're the captain of this ship too, Kevin. We're coming to you for answers, pal. Have you not noticed? We're here spinning our wheels.
Here's my answer. And it's
I was going to say this. In my experience, leadership generally comes from inside the position, not only your side of the ball, within the position group, within that room. There's a little bit of leeway from guys on your side of the ball in a different room, like linebackers talking to the D linemen or DBs.
And this is why specialists can never
for a linebacker to go to the receiver room is like, why the fuck aren't you guys getting open? It's like, doesn't have a whole lot of meaning behind it. You know,
could you imagine though?
I think it's far more productive. Like you were saying earlier for Lindy to stand up in the offensive line room is like, we have to get our fucking shit together, guys. I'm embarrassed of what we put out there on Saturday. I'm embarrassed of what we put out there the game before. This is my last season as an Iowa Hawkeye. I'll be damned if we're going to do that for another four games. I think that's productive.
Yeah, I do.
The other side of the ball doing that is just finger pointing, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to get at. In the end, and I was very hyper aware of this, not in the first 2 years because I opened my mouth too much and KF eventually said that everybody hated me, and that's cool, then. Hey, man, that's cool. Hey, head coach, national press conference, said everybody hated me. That's cool, right? Because I learned. But there is a unwritten hierarchy of who opens their mouth to who. And I'm glad you think that's funny. There's an unwritten hierarchy of who opens their mouth to who, and going cross sides of the ball, everybody can shit on the specialist. Specialists can shit on no one, right?
Exactly.
Defense and offense defense and offense should probably stay within their side when it comes to crossing over that line. Right now, do I think it would be funny if Josie would have went into the receiver's room and been like, hey, guys, just want to let you know it'd be great. The defense would love if you guys would catch some balls. Offense is not doing great right now. We're doing our best on the defensive side, but we would love if you could produce some points on the offensive side of the ball. And that's all I have to say. And I'm going to and then Josie just walked out. But reality is KF walks in. Oh, shit. Huh? Better listen to 43. Guy's pretty good. It's not productive, right? Like, that is only going to create a tension where the offense cannot control anything the defense does. The defense cannot control anything that the offense does in reality, right? Like, directly in the most primary sense. And if the offense throws a pick on Saturday, the defense simply doesn't get to go, no, they've already thrown three picks. We're not going to go out there this time.
No, you got to eat your shit. Yeah, you got to eat your shit sandwich and go out there and do the job.
Yeah. And so, man,
you can definitely come back to practice on Tuesday and bitch slap them for making you eat that shit sandwich. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And there's ways where you can get that point across. I don't think that with Iowa's culture, it will become an issue that's that big of a problem. But it's an interesting topic because we're to the point with results wise the last few weeks where if somebody on that defensive side of the ball did say something, you know, if Jack Campbell stood up and said, hey, offense, get your head out of your ass, I don't think anybody on the offense would be like, shut up, Jack. They'd be like, well, he's kind of fucking right. Like, we need to do something here because, you know, but who knows?
I mean, this is a very tough thing. This is a very tough dynamic to handle.
Yeah.
And it takes...
It's deep.
I think it takes a lot of maturity. Like I said, it's easy to finger point. It's very easy to say, well, they're just not getting the job done. I don't know, man. Like I said, I didn't have an answer back in 2017. I don't have an answer for you right now.
We always preach that ego is the enemy of a culture. And if your own can't criticize your own for underperforming and just like make them take a real hard look in the mirror, then
yeah,
I'm
but
just,
that's,
I, that, if, that's if they're I'm, too sensitive to take the criticism, then they're too sensitive to win football games.
I'm not saying that. Like I said, I think your own's got to be your own in your position group. Whoever the leader of that room is just calling them calling your offense a bunch of pieces of shit on Tuesday after you kick their ass and 1v1s.
Is it really going to do anything?
Is that calling them out? Is that productive criticism? I don't know. I'm fully aware. Like these guys are able to take criticism. I mean, if you're not going to last long at a Big Ten football if you can't take criticism, unless you can just walk on water and you are just incapable of failing. But just like telling them how dog shit they are.
It's like the people on Twitter saying Brian's bad at their job, right? It's like there needs to be a little substance behind it. Like the Twitter, like Brian's bad at his job. Okay, well,
like you could say like, hey, like you were saying earlier, like, you know, seeing a lack of fight out of them. You could say, hey, I'm tired of seeing y'all
just accept getting beat.
Yeah.
There's it's so I mean, we could sit here and sort of contemplate for hours because it is a deep issue where challenging another man with substance where he's going to take that and recognize, shit, there's a guy I respect that's challenging me, letting me know that I'm not doing
it. See, here's the thing for me is like, I don't think there's a lack of recognition on the part of the offense.
I don't either. I think
if there is, there's a extreme cognitive dissonance of what's happening.
If they don't know that they're playing like horse turds, then there's something wrong with those guys, and they're probably failing classes too, because it's pretty obvious, you know. Yeah,
so
that's all. Kevin, you did mention, and we kind of got into the conversation, that this is still not some, even though it feels like we should be so far away from Indianapolis, this is one game away from still changing.
Right. We need a Purdue loss and Wisconsin loss. We went out. We're still going to Indy.
It's still a very simple, and that's probably going to happen. I believe Purdue plays Ohio State still.
Purdue plays Michigan State and Ohio State, so I'm not worried about Purdue.
And Wisconsin could very easily, I mean, they made us look like shit, but they're not, you know, some of the Wisconsins that they've been in the past. So
yeah, I mean,
their schedule is pretty
tough.
Toughest
games left are Nebraska, who is
can't win games.
They're about giving up on.
We've got some insight on the Huskers, and it doesn't sound like it's going.
Yeah,
too
and
good.
Then I mean, they got Minnesota for the last game of the year. We might be really big
Gopher fans
Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, man.
I mean, that'd be fun. I mean, say the Hawks win out, Purdue loses one game. Hawks beat Nebraska on Friday, and we're just hoping to God Minnesota beats Wisconsin to send us to Indy on Saturday. That'd be something to watch.
Yeah. Yep.
And then
are
that's
you
what
trying
we're
to
hoping
salvage
for
right some now. Fun out of this season, Kevin?
I mean, that's what we're hoping for right there. I mean, I know we're 6-2, and the last two have been horrible.
The last three have been horrible, man. The last three, one of them was won by the defense.
But it was still
we still beat Penn State.
It was an all-time win.
Yeah. It was an all-time day.
But from an offensive side of the ball, man.
Yeah, I'm just saying, man.
Objectively,
the first 6 weeks of the season have been pretty damn fun.
Sure, they were very fun.
I just want to make it known before we cut this off that if it's Padilla, if it's Petrus, if they throw KF himself out there at quarterback, I'm supporting who's ever out there, and I'm okay with who's ever out there, right? Put Seth Benson out there, right? Shit, put the Cooper kid. They tried to maybe run a fake kickoff at the end there with Cooper DeJean, who's the freshman guy, the freshman recruit who's supposed to be pretty good. It didn't work out, but.
Hey,
I don't know.
A for effort, trying to make something happen, right?
Maybe we got to grab the ranch out of the fridge and throw it on that shitty cardboard pizza and see what happens, right? That's all I'm saying. The Hawks lost. They're 6-2. There's still stuff in front of us. But for now, we'll leave it at that. Everybody be sad this week because no one deserves to be happy. That's the way it should go. No one deserves happiness. Wallow in your sorrow.
I'll still be all right.
Happiness is fake. Embrace the pain.
I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be fine.
Life is suffering.
My life and my daily attitude relies 0% on how the Hawkeyes do. Although
I wouldn't say 0%. But.
I would say somewhat, but it's very small percent. If this podcast dies because the Hawks suck, then I will have to really up some other parts of my my income. But anyway, that's okay. 263. And I thank you boys for getting up early in the morning with me because I'll be hopefully Dak is a game time decision. So get your shit together, Dak, because the Cowboys are at the Vikings and your boy's going to be there. That's it. 263. Everybody loosen your arm up because you might be in a quarterback this week.
Everyone's on the depth chart this week.
Everybody is.